I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast, pre-Tony edition. I am your host, Rebecca Milzoff, features editor at Billboard and Broadway fan extraordinaire here. So if you're listening to this episode in real time, the Tonys are just 2 days away. So I think it's really the perfect time to check out the Billboard on Broadway archives, catch up on the major shows of the past season. I have been fortunate to have nearly all of the Tony-nominated musicals, many of their stars and members of their creative teams on the podcast. And in my humble opinion, there have been a pretty high quantity of great conversations lately that make for perfect pre-Tony prep if you are a theater fan. We'll have some new episodes coming up soon, but this week I'm throwing it back to one of my all-time favorite guests for a Best of Billboard on Broadway episode. In August of 2018, I was thrilled to have one of the most beloved stars in musical theater, Sutton Foster, on the podcast. It's always exciting, I think, when you find that the artists you look up to are actually lovely, interesting people in the real world, too. So it was delightful to find that that was definitely true with Sutton. At the time, she had recently released a great album of music called Take Me to the World, and we talked a lot about how she put together the mix of classic and more contemporary song choices on it, along with her collaborative process with the drama students from Ball State University, who appear on the album and who Sutton has also taught for several years now. But we also delved into her already storied career, how she makes choices about the shows she wants to do, the composers she looks up to, and her roles on television, on Younger, and before that on Bunheads. This seemed like a great time to revisit my conversation with Sutton because she has a whole lot coming up. Most imminently, she's about to start a run of shows at the Café Carlyle in New York, the famous sort of intimate cabaret venue, where she will be performing songs from Take Me to the World in concert. The sixth season of Younger is about to start as well on TV Land. And in the category of major musical things to look forward to, on the podcast, Sutton and I talk about kind of what it would take for her to do another Broadway show soon, what she would want in that project. And lo and behold, it was recently announced that she's going to be returning to Broadway in the fall of 2020, starring opposite Hugh Jackman in a new production of The Music Man, which I'm sure will be huge when it comes.
I'll give you stars and the moon and a soul to guide you and a promise I'll never go. I'll give you hope to bring out all the life inside you and the strength that will help you grow.
Hello, Sutton.
Hi.
I feel like I need to sing like Sutton Foster. You need a musical introduction. Well, excited to see you here. I have to say, first of all, that I'm one of the people who, in addition to having seen you in musicals over the years, is also a crazy Bunheads fan. So you will always be endeared to my heart for Bunheads.
Thank you. I love Bunheads. It was the short-lived love of my life.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, like, how many people who recognize you or come up to you on the street are crazy Bunheads fans.
There's a lot of Bunheads fans out there. I was like, where were you? Where was the noise when we needed you? I know. But no, it's been so cool. And it's and now it lives on. You know, I think it's on Hulu. And so many people are like watching it now for the first time. And I it was such a special show. And it was so cool to be on a show that was very well loved.
It was, I indeed watched the entire thing for a second time on Hulu.
So it's good that it is living on. I need to do that. I haven't done that yet.
It's an excellent way to while away like 8 hours of your life on a rainy day, for sure.
Okay.
Talking about the album seemed like a good moment to me to kind of dial back and reflect, because I see some reflection on the album of your like beginnings with Millie, some people who have kind of been in your musical life for many, many years now. So if we could start by rewinding back to that first big moment for you, are there ways that you still see things that you've learned from Millie reflected in your career and the work that you're doing now? Or is it more like people who have kind of stuck with you, like Janine Tesori?
Yeah.
I'm curious, like 16 years later, if you still have moments where you're like, oh, I learned that doing that show.
Millie was a life-changing, career-changing moment for me in my life. And there are people that I met on that show that I still work with, Janine Tesori, who I've now worked with several times, Michael Rafter, who was our music director on Millie and conductor, is my music director to this date. You know, he's responsible for all of the arrangements on the new album. He's like a true collaborator. You know, when you meet someone who makes you better, you know, I feel like working with him and Janine too as well. It's like, you just sort of, we all sort of met in our youth and our beginnings, and then we've mm-hmm. like we've grown up together. But Millie taught me a lot of things. It taught me how to be how to do 8 shows a week, how to have endurance and stamina, how to be a leader of a company. I'd never done that before in that capacity. How to deal with criticism, how to stop reading reviews and stop reading the comments. Stay off of message boards.
I was going to say, was it message boards back
then?
Was it comments
yet? Yeah, it was all like, you know, like social media. I mean, now it's changed since then, but you know, it was just sort of the beginning of when people started sharing their opinions online, and it was available for any and everyone to read. And so I feel like, and also I will say, one of the things that I learned from doing Millie is that it helped me find a better balance in my life, because I think back then in my 20s, and I was 27 when it opened, I turned 27 right before we opened, I think I had, as far as the scale of life, I had many more coins in the career column than the relationships and personal life, and that has definitely balanced out as I've gotten older. So Millie taught me a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it seems like it's kind of a rare thing that a first project can be kind of like defining, but in a good way. And I feel like that sort of established you as a triple threat. And there, it doesn't seem like there would have been any downside to that. Did you after that show, did you feel like you needed to prove yourself in other ways, or did it just pretty much set a good path going forward for you?
I mean, I have a different perspective on it now, having many years of time pass. Millie was like the best thing that had ever happened to me, but also like the worst thing that had ever happened to me, because it like just tore me apart. It like broke me apart. Mm-hmm. It was debilitating and hard, and where I should have been like on the top of the world, I felt this enormous pressure to deliver, and when I couldn't, it was, you know, debilitating. But there is like this thing, like you've achieved something and how do you have staying power? What do you do next? You know, how mm-hmm. do you continue to, I don't know, challenge yourself as an artist, but also stay relevant in like the theater scene? Or so it was an interesting, the next project I did after Millie was Little Women, which was again, another just like sort of juggernaut role, that, wasn't as successful as Millie. And then that sort of taught me like, all right, I can't keep trying to sort of top myself in this direction. I need to like make a left turn and do something different. And that was what brought on Drowsy Chaperone. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like very pointed that I wanted to do something that was more ensemble, about being part of an ensemble of people as opposed to me being in the front. Cause mm-hmm. I couldn't handle that. I didn't know how. It was like breaking me apart, which seems so silly, you know, but I have a different, I can have reflection on it now, but Drowsy was a very, was a gift. Cause it like I was sharing the responsibility with all of these incredible people. And it was like this magical little show that made me sort of fall in love with it all again.
And I feel like that's something that we see on the album that I want to get into too, that it's like, I feel like it's very rare to see a solo album like this that feels like really collaborative.
Yeah.
And like you are the main person on the album, but there are other voices that mm-hmm. are prominent. And
it was really important to me that the album feel like a collaboration. And I yes, it is my name on the front, but it's, there's so many amazing people that went into building the album, and I wanted to share. There's many duets. I have a group number with incredible singers from Ball, because it was a collaboration with Ball State University. I'm an adjunct faculty there, and we wanted to record it there, and it was awesome. We used their recording studios. We used their orchestra. We used over 100 students and faculty. We used the senior musical theater class of 2018, as well as the teachers, the voice teachers. So it was this one, and their entire art and design department designed the album. They did all of the packaging, everything. So it was like incredible to be able to sort of give back and also use all of these young minds too, to sort of like redefine what this album was going to be.
So I didn't realize until I was reading about the album how long teaching has been kind of part of your life as well. And
yeah.
I mean, really going back to when you were kind of starting out. So I was curious about how that came into your life and what it is like to be teaching young people as your own career is still like
yeah.
really developing.
I feel like I had a really wonderful relationship with my high school drama teacher, Mr. Bodick. Mr. Rick Bodick. I still call him Mr. Bodick. But he he was just incredibly influential. And like, because I didn't know that theater, or let alone musical theater, you could make a career out of it. For me, it was just something you did for fun. You know, it was like mm-hmm. a hobby. Or, and he was really like someone who like just introduced me to so much, and has always been a champion, and has always encouraged me still to this day. And I always felt really passionate about wanting to give back in some way, because I grew up in a tiny, I grew up in Georgia and small towns in Georgia, and then moved to suburbs of Michigan. New York was like, I had no concept of New York. I did a paper on it, you know, when I was like a freshman, and and that was before, you know, the internet. So now I feel like things are more accessible, you know. But back then we went to the library. We would like check out like cast recordings, and we'd watch the Tony Awards. That was like the only outlet I had.
Mm-hmm.
So I started like early, but even before I moved to New York, I volunteered at a local community theater when I was living in Memphis, because I dropped out of college. And I was completely lost, and I was like, what do I do? And I was like, I'm going to volunteer at this community theater and like working with young people. And then I just felt super passionate about it. And whenever we would do, and my affiliation with Ball State, they had just reached out to me for like a talk back to talk to their students. I think when I was doing Drowsy Chaperone, and I was like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, and I just sort of fell in love with their students and their faculty, and there was a real Midwest sensibility and earnestness, and it just felt like the right fit for me. And it was a program that was redefining itself, and it was kind of like on the verge of sort of bubbling and growing, and it's been incredible. And I now, like, I teach a cabaret class every year via like Skype, and and then they do a
Skype
show,
cabaret,
a Skype cabaret. then they do a performance in Indianapolis, and then in March they do a performance at Joe's Pub here in New York. And so it's like really cool. And we've done, and Michael Rafter actually and I teach it together. And so it just felt fitting that we would incorporate them, you know, with the album. And we've just developed this wonderful relationship with the school. And it feels like it's so important to me. And it's also like really important to me to be able to share, as my career has evolved and changed, now being in television. And I feel like I have, oh my gosh, I learned this today. I can like share it with this.
And tell someone else.
Yeah, share it with this like next generation, you know. And sort of share my experiences and how, like, you don't have to, you can work really hard and you can kind of keep challenging yourself. And you can, I mean, I'm from the Midwest too, you know. It's like, you don't have to be an asshole to kind of succeed, and how to, like,
how, worthy lesson.
Yeah, you know, like, you can, like, work really hard and things can work out. Yeah.
And you've directed there too, a couple of shows.
I've co-directed, right? Yeah. Okay. So Bill Jenkins is the chair of the department, and he's just been my like champion there. And so they did Drowsy Chaperone, and they did Shrek the Musical, and I was able to come in and sort of help with casting and sort of give some insight into, you know, my experience of what it was like doing it on Broadway, and sort of share some character development and help them with their productions.
That makes sense. I was wondering if, like, secretly you were like directing your own Sweeney Todd or something.
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing. But a lot of it is because I'm so busy, which is incredible. I'm my time Bill has been able to I've been able to come in for like little snippets of time to kind of come in and sort of dance around and flit off some pearls of wisdom or something. But yeah, and I'll say 2025 Sutton Foster's production of Sweeney Todd.
The world is waiting. It sounds amazing. Well, I think that one thing that really popped out to me about the album, which I hadn't really, I guess, thought about looking at your body of work before, is like how many living composers you've been able to work with and who you're championing. And I want to talk about Janine first and Michael as well. What do you think was kind of the foundation of that relationship starting, and what kind of made the two of you click as a partnership that has kind of continued through the years since then?
I think she's a genius.
Fair statement. Fair statement.
I love being in a room with her. She elevates everyone around her. She's an incredible collaborator. She is so willing to say, okay, look, no, that doesn't work, or let's do it, let's try this, or blah, 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 you know, like, what do you think? Or, I just think she's a total badass. Like, I would follow her anywhere, and if she calls and asks me to do anything, I would do it in a heartbeat without asking what it was. The other person I can put in that category is Amy Sherman-Palladino and Lee Silverman, who I've worked with now as a director several times. They're just women they're strong, powerful women who make everyone better. And I just love, they all make me better. And I feel like I just don't want to let, I never want to let Janine down. You know, I've loved working with her. We did Millie, we did Shrek, and we did Violet. And she's just, the best. I hope that I get to work with her again and again.
And her, and it's a real like variety of things that she's done too. I mean, do you see kind of a through line about like what makes her music so great to you to perform?
It's like we share a voice, I guess. It's like a it seems really weird to say, but it's like we like know each other. It's like it's the secret. It's that secret thing, you know. It's like that chemistry thing, you know. It's like it's hard to define, because you can work with people and you're like, oh, we're not on the same page, or it doesn't fit, or I can sing someone's music and I'm like, oh, geez, doesn't work. But there's something about Janine, like the minute I start to learn a song of hers, it's as if it was written for me, which. There have been songs that have been written for me, but it's like, we like understand each other.
I was going to say at this point, like, I would think she is writing to your voice almost since you've worked together so much.
Yeah. It's like, it's one of those amazing things. And I feel that way about Michael Rafter too. It's like, you hope that a lot of people work, solo, you know, a lot of people work on their own or, you know, I find, especially in creativity or anything creative or art, the arts, it's like collaboration is the key, you know, and you hope that you find a collaborator who by working together, you actually make each other better, because you're better together than you are on your own. And I feel that way about Michael Rafter. It's like, we come together and we both are better. And it's like, there's no one else that I could sing with than him.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at Burrow.com/ACAST. And up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
So was he and or Janine instrumental in kind of coming up with the concept for the album in the first place? Was that a conversation or more something that came purely from you?
Michael and I, we do lots of concerts, and we started doing... We did like the very first concert we did was an American Songbook for Lincoln Center back in 2004, right after I left Millie. It was the first time I'd ever done something like that, where you're like, you know, it's like the cabaret art form, or I always call it a concert because somehow the word cabaret can have such, like, lots of feelings.
You People have like lots of feelings. Sitting on a piano with a glass of wine.
So I'm like, we do concerts, but and then we did an album in 2008, I guess. That was really derived. I was going through a divorce, and Michael had gone through some health issues, and we were both. That album was my first album, which was called Wish, and it was really like this album of healing for both of us. And then we just kind of kept doing concerts. And like we could have a tour shirt that would have, like, you know, lots of cities on. We just all over the country, the world. We started doing symphony stuff, and we knew we wanted to do another album, but we didn't feel like we had it, like, whatever the album was going to be. And then my husband and I adopted a baby girl, and suddenly the songs that we were looking at and the music that we were being that we were drawn to started to shift, because I had this new life in my life, and I was suddenly a mom, and like So the album started to take place. Mm-hmm. So that was really what formed the album, was the birth of Emily, my daughter.
The only thing that I'm missing, which I've never seen one of your solo shows, but I feel like I've heard so much about you singing Mabel this time to your dog, that I'm a little sad that's not on the album.
Yeah, that didn't make the cut. I know poor Mabel's having a hard time. Mabel's my dog, and so she was the first, and then we got Brody, another dog, and then she was like, why have you done this? And then we brought a human child, and now she's just...
Beside herself.
Yeah, she's really... She's really having a hard time. So I should have put Mabel this time on the album for her.
At least she gets to be serenaded.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, I was going to say that this does not just feel like cabaret on tape. Going back to the collaborative aspect of it, did you initially have all of the students in the room with you, or would you start out working on things by yourself, or was it always sort of being in the room with them?
For the album?
Yeah.
We had put together for... So what's interesting is like... So the final track on the album is Every Time We Say Goodbye, which is a Cole Porter song. We had been commissioned by the Cincinnati Pops to do four new arrangements of Cole Porter. This was 2 years ago. And so we, for the cabaret class at Ball State, we decided to focus on Cole Porter. And one of the songs that they sang at the end of their class, at the end of their show that they did, was Every Time We Say Goodbye, arranged by Michael Rafter, this beautiful a cappella version. And then when we sang, we had them sing it with the Cincinnati Pops with full orchestra coming in. And I knew I wanted to include that on the album. Now, the label was like, but you're not singing on it. It's just the students. And I said, but that's what the whole album is about. The whole album mm-hmm. is about collaboration and about the future, you know, about this is the future. This is the next generation. You know, it was like a gift for them. It was like, this is the whole point. And then the On My Way, I'm On My Way, On My Way mm-hmm. was actually written for, six singers. And we did it at I did a concert at Lincoln Center, in April of 17, right after Emily was born, and six moms sang it. And I knew, oh, I want to do this on the album. And two of the moms were Darcy Roberts and Megan McGinnis, who I do duets with on the album. And then we decided that the other voices would be, the three other voices soloed are the faculty voice teachers at Ball State, and then the chorus are the musical theater seniors and alumni at Ball State. So it was all done very, the piece had already been created, and then we decided to open it up and mm-hmm. include everybody.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go through some of my favorite tracks on the album because they made me want to hear more from you with these people. First was Jason Robert Brown,
yes.
who I was like, no, she needs to do a Jason Robert Brown show. he will be a podcast guest, actually, a little later in the summer. So what is your history with him? And this song, Stars and the Moon, is just, to me, such a classic JRB kind of song. Tell me about how you kind of decided to do that song and what you knew of him before.
I had always been a fan of his. When I was a kid growing up, I was obsessed with Songs for a New World. So I used to listen to it, you know, in my room. And I actually decided to sing it for the first time when I did a concert with Janine Tesori. This was at City Center like 2 years ago with Jonathan Groff. Jonathan Groff did this one night only concert at City Center, and we got to sing songs we've always...
Tragic to have missed them, by the way.
It was pretty awesome. And so we got to sing songs that like we've never sung before. So I didn't want to... So I was like, I've always wanted to sing Stars and the Moon. And then as soon as I sang it, I was like, oh my gosh, I finally get this song. Like, you have to be of a certain age, I think, mm-hmm. to like really understand it. And like as a kid, I never really got it. And then you're like, oh, you have to have like some life experience to realize what it means. And then I just started doing it in concerts. When I would work with Rafter, and I was like, I got to sing this. And then, honestly, It All Fades Away, the other Jason Robert Brown song, a student at Ball State, a boy. My brother was in the show. Like, my brother had done the show on Broadway. But a student at Ball State sang It All Fades Away in a music class. And I was listening to it, and I went, oh, gosh, that's a really great song. And I said to Michael, I said, because I had been talking to Jason Robert Brown, because we're friends, and I told him that I was working on an album, and I said, do you have any trunk songs or any, like, things that haven't been recorded, or, you know? And he was sort of sending me ideas, and he sent me another song from Bridges. And I was like, what about It All Fades Away? And we started working on that, and then it became, like, it's like one of my favorite things I've ever done.
So were you actually working with him when you were
with Jason?
Yeah.
No. And I was I did it all with Michael.
Okay.
And then and I just was praying that Jason would give us his blessing. And then I did a concert with Jason, just like a one night only, because he has a residency at Subculture here in New York.
Yes.
And I got to sing. I sang Stars in the Moon, It All Fades Away, and then three of his other songs that I learned for that night. But I got to sing them with him. And that was wild. I was like, what is my life? Like, this
yes,
is so
really
cool.
Cool accompanist.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty wild.
I love those. Having recently gone to see 12th Night, Shayna Tabb is amazing. Another former podcast guest. And love the song Room that you chose. I mean, that and the Jason songs they're like really sort of huge journeys, like, within a song. And they're kind of about, like, going through stuff in life, it seems to me.
Yeah.
But what is your connection to Shayna?
So Shayna and I met... This is a wild. So, I taught. This is such a. I taught two semesters at NYU, and I ended up doing. I did two sort of cabaret class. That was before I started working at Ball State. So I did two sort of cabaret classes at NYU, and then I did. I taught the freshmen. I can't even remember what year. I did a vocal performance. So I ended up teaching like 60 freshmen, a lot of which are now like on Broadway and doing really well, all because of me. No, I did nothing. But they, actually, Jelani's in Frozen. He was one of my students. And Ariel Satchel, who just won the Tony for Band's Visit, he was one of my students.
Oh my God.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, wow. Anyway, oddly, and crazily enough, the pianist for the for this class, for the vocal performance classes, was Shayna Taub. And I had no idea. I was like, why were you playing piano? She's like, I just wanted to brush up on my, like, sight reading. And she's like, I just wanted to be in the room. And I was like, what? Like, why would you ever do that? I had no idea that she was such a brilliant composer. And so then Room came across my plate. I think I reached out to her again, like, as I was, like, sort of looking for material, and she either sent me Room or someone sent it to me, and I just fell in love with it. I thought it was so beautiful, and I sang it, that concert where I sang Stars in the Moon with, mm-hmm. with Jonathan Groff. I sang Room, and Shayna actually was part of that concert. She because the concert was a mix of, like, Jonathan and I singing stuff, and then a bunch of young new composers, and she was one of the new composers sort of doing her material. And I just fell in love with it and knew I wanted to do it on the album.
I feel like Shayna is always popping up in places you don't expect her, like,
which is so awesome. I just will never forget. I was like, why are you playing piano in, like, freshman vocal performance class?
Yes.
She was just, like, the coolest. She's just the coolest.
I feel like she is kind of like the cool piano playing singer songwriter girl who, like, I kind of wish I was.
Yeah, right.
Also, very exciting to see you singing Sondheim.
Yeah.
I sort of wonder, like, is there a Sondheim show that you would want to do in the near future? Oh, like, God. What is your Sondheim wish list?
I did one of my favorite things I've ever done was Anyone Can Whistle. We did it at City Center Encores back in 2010. excuse me, burping. sorry. And it was just incredible, like, to work on his music. And to, he was in the room and I was like frozen. I was like, I lost the ability to speak. I mean, I would love to do a Sondheim show someday. That would be a dream. Sweeney Todd, maybe someday. It's my favorite show ever.
Who would you be in Sweeney Todd?
Well, eventually Mrs. Lovett.
Yes.
Right? We got to, maybe in a couple years.
Your time is coming.
And my time is coming.
To break out your Cockney. and there is some pop on the album, some James Taylor and Simon and Garfunkel. And I was curious what your kind of personal history and relationship to pop music is. I kind of think of you as someone who must have like come out of the womb tap dancing, but
I know, right? Well, see, but I also grew up in the 70s, right? Mm. So like my mom used to listen to, I always joke about the 8-tracks, and she used to listen to John Denver and James Taylor and Dan Vogelberg. And, you know, I grew up like Carole King and Simon and Garfunkel. And like, I grew up listening to all this stuff. And like, I love folk. Like if I'm, every people always ask, like, what do I listen to? Either nothing, like just silence, which is awesome. Or like today's hits. Like I listen to like the pop, the like today's pop, which I couldn't tell you who sings what, but I like will bop along, you know. It's like anything, or I'll listen to like folk or something that's like super chill.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like James Taylor is one of my favorites, and I would love to do a whole James Taylor album, or John Denver too.
No, it's, I like the James Taylor arrangement a lot. It's like a little different,
yeah,
from the way I'm used to hearing that song.
Yeah.
But it occurs to me that this is like the kind of music that adults can enjoy, but also like play around a baby and like everything is chill and calm.
Yeah. So, I mean, the album is definitely eclectic, but it's a culmination of many, many years. Like it's evolved. We didn't want to just, and we over-recorded it. I mean, there are three songs that we recorded that we didn't include. Like we really, everything was very thoughtfully selected, and it has taken like years and years to sort of come to where I am right now in 2018, you know, as an artist, as a person. So it's cool. It's like this little time capsule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that is a perfect segue, because I was going to say that the last show I saw you in was Sweet Charity, which was Amaz. That felt kind of like a turning point for you in a way to me. I'm not 100% sure why, but maybe because it's a bit of a darker role. It had that kind of minimalist production.
Yeah.
It was a different context than I'm used to seeing you in.
Yeah.
So I was curious if I was right about that in terms of what it was like for you professionally, and going forward from here, like what are the kinds of roles that you want to be doing, and then that you're interested in?
That's interesting. It was a very specific, incredible thing, like that show, and it was exactly what I wanted it to be. Like it was just, I wanted to play that role in in a whole new way, and it was just to be able to perform that close to an audience too was terrifying. It was like, it was literally, people were a foot away from me.
Yeah.
It was awesome. I think as I'm moving forward, I've loved doing younger. I've loved being on TV. That's been like a wonderful thing for me. I just want to work with good people. I want to be challenged. I want to be. I'm interested in the left turns. I'm interested in the where people go, huh? Or like, that wasn't what I was expecting, or that's not what I thought, or like, that's interesting to me, because I can't keep, like, after I did Anything Goes on Broadway, I was like, how do I keep going this direction? It's like impossible, because that was like, how can you? In my mind, I was like, I don't know how to top that. So I did Violet, which was like a totally left. And then I did Sweet Charity. So it's like, whoa, like what? That's interesting to me. Like I feel like I want to keep going in new directions every time. I know that can't always be the case, but that's what I would like to do.
Has doing younger made you sort of hungry for doing more musical theater in certain ways? Or are you happy with the TV track for now, because you are surrounded by so many theater people on the show that I'm like, I know all the theater people are always like, why can't there be a musical episode of Younger?
I know. I feel like where I am now in my life, I feel like Younger came at a really great time. I was starting to experience some burnout performing live, and Younger just sort of was this whole new thing, like a whole new, even though it's some, you know, you're playing a character, you're telling a story. It's like you're acting, but it's like a whole new being on television and being on a set is completely different than doing theater. So it was like this whole new thing that I got to learn. And that was just a wonderful opportunity. But I would absolutely love to do another show if it's the right thing and it feels right. I've got like irons in the fire and some things that are exciting, but I really want it to feel like something that will be challenging and exciting.
Well, I was going to say there must be offers occasionally for you to come back here, because you're definitely missed.
And everyone's like, you've left Broadway for television. I was like, wait, no, hopefully Broadway will always be here.
Yeah. Like, I feel like Sweet Charity was just like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was... I believe that you will be back soon.
Okay.
I choose to believe.
Okay.
Well, thank you for coming. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Yay. As long as you like. So close your eyes. You can close your eyes. It's all right. Sutton Foster will be performing at the Cafe Carlisle June 11th through 22nd, and also in an extension June 25th through 29th. And Younger will be back on TV Land starting June 12th. If you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, or before the Tonys, you just want to get into it, which I fully support, you can find us on iTunes, where it is easy to give stars and nice reviews if you like the podcast. We're also on other platforms, including Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can find me on social media at Rebecca Milzoff on Twitter, and at You Down with RMM on Instagram. And you can always tweet or talk about your love of the podcast with hashtag Billboard on Broadway. If you're a fan of print media or even of web media, you can find a bunch of pre-Tony interviews that I've done with people like Hadestown's Amber Gray, The Prom's Caitlin Kinnunen, and Oklahoma's Damon Downo on billboard.com. And you can also find a big kind of Tony nominee preview that I did in the last week's issue of Billboard on Stands. If you can find it, go for it. And hope to have you back for a new episode soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.